It's time for the weekly Beggared Belief. Is there a Beggared Belief theme song?
Beggared Belief.
Everybody, we're Sorkin in it. Watching the newsroom, please take just a minute. It's a podcast. Aaron Sorkin might choose about Will and Mackenzie making the news. You're Sorkin in it.
The music just told us we are Sorkin in it, and who am I to disagree? Welcome back, everybody, and welcome to you, Lex Friedman.
Music doesn't lie, Brian Warren. Welcome to you as well.
Well done. Well done. We got both of our names out there. And here we are. This is episode 3 of season 2 of The Newsroom, one of the more oddly named ones called Willie Pete.
Willie Pete.
Yeah, Willie Pete. And I believe you're the one to give us a little bit of a synopsis.
A couple things happening in Willie Pete. Will is grumpy because Nina, the tabloid reporter, has someone's leaked to Nina that Will did not have the flu during the anniversary 9/11 coverage, that in fact he was benched. Meanwhile, Mackenzie and that guy who's annoying are investigating more of this Genoa story. did we use sarin gas against some folks? Maggie's getting ready to go to Uganda, and Jim is making just about everybody mad on the Romney press bus. And I guess other things happen. But that was the crux of the episode, I think. This was an experience for me, Brian, watching this one. This was the first time I was truly in a mindset of, what are we doing? Because I got mad at this episode. And again, like for listeners, some of this is a broken record for me. There were things I liked. There were some really good scenes, and I made specific, explicit note of everything I liked. But there was so much chaff, I guess. There was so much crap in this episode that really was not working for me. And I'm curious, like, overall vibes, how did you feel? Because maybe you loved Willie Pete and you can sell me on it.
You know, there were several moments of dialogue that I adored in this one. There were a lot of scenes that I thought were actually pretty well written. What I don't get is, or what's not grabbing me at all, is this whole story. This season 2 arc that Sorkin's going for, he is so proud of what he's doing and he's building it over time, and you can just see him like practically doing a victory dance while he's writing these things out on longhand. But I am so not there for it.
Thunderous applause, Brian. You nailed it. It's the storyline. The storyline sucks, even though the writing is good. And this is the first episode where I'm like, man, I really just want to see the interpersonal relationship stuff. And the other stuff I'm not enjoying. Man, that's so well said. But yes, it's the stories are dumb. I don't care about almost any of the storylines. Let's start at the top, as we do.
Okay.
I enjoyed that this episode began with a lot longer than we typically sit in the news broadcast, at least for many episodes.
Yeah.
We really sat there for a while.
This is a good one, too.
It was that story. This was from 9/23/11. It's about 5 minutes of the opening of the newsroom is about Newsnight, or is Newsnight broadcast. And a story that I did not recall, but I looked up and watched the clips of and watched the reporting of.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. There was a Republican debate. A soldier's on video saying, hey, I'm gay. I wasn't allowed to be publicly gay in the military until this, you know, then recent, I guess, policy change. Or if you're elected president, are you going to change this policy and make me be secretly gay again? Don't ask, don't tell. And the audience boos, right? The people in attendance boo because he's gay and in the military, I guess. Or because he's just gay. And Will really goes on a tear about this, about the hypocrisy of Republican nominees talking about, we love our troops, we support our troops like crazy, and then none of them come to the defense of saying, hey, don't boo this active military person. Like, most of it was just, it was clearly Sorkin getting some stuff off his chest, but I thought it was well done as a moment.
Yeah, right. He really went on a tear. And do I have a foggy memory of Will saying that, like, he knew John McCain or something like that? Like, in the story of this thing, like,
I feel like that's
because
right.
I remember when, like,
I ordered a foggy memory at a bar last night, by the way.
It was delicious. Probably came in a novelty cup. So the But I remember, like, during McCain's campaign, like, he fact checks someone at a town hall who's like deriding Obama and stuff, and he's like, no, let's all calm down here. That's not what this is about.
That's right. No, ma'am. He's not a Muslim. He's not a secret Muslim. Something like that.
Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with being a Muslim, exactly. But that's beside the point, I guess. And so I feel like Will misses that time of America when people could, you know, like have be not quite so polarized on this one on stuff like this. And so I appreciated that. And what did he call them? He called them witless bullies and hapless punks. I thought that was a good good turn of phrase there. I enjoyed it.
Oh, you like that. Then we get to one of my favorite, maybe my favorite moment of the episode. Charlie and Will are fighting.
Ooh, yeah.
And, I didn't write down this part, but I guess it's because Charlie's informing Will, hey, it leaked. Like, Nina knows that you didn't have the flu. And Will's like, I'll look like an idiot. And Charlie says, it could be worse. Will says, how? And Charlie says, I could look like an idiot. And Will is like, really? And he's like, hey, it was the timing was right for that joke. I had to take it. And I was like, that to me, like you were saying before with Sorkin, that to me is Sorkin just having fun. Like, that is the right joke. I feel for Charlie in that scenario. If the timing is now, it's funny in part because Charlie set up his own timing.
Yep.
It's not like he just happened upon it. He's like, well, I set it up, so I had to knock it down. But I totally was there with him. I loved it. And I think the most, and this is a deep insight for me. I like the most when Sorkin writes about writing, and to me that was writing about writing, because like it was a thing, and I really enjoyed it.
And they kept referring to people in mobster movies that get shot as yes. If it's fine, I'm Joe Pesci. It's like, well, did you watch that movie? Because
I've watched that.
Like,
movie.
Okay, fine, I'm James Caan. Well, he got even more bullets in him.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that whole thing. So listeners, right now, maybe you're confused. Maybe you're like, why didn't Lex like this episode? He's 2 for 2 on liking things. And I like the next thing, too. I like Jim on the bus. I like Grace yelling at Jim on the bus.
Yep.
I like the turkey sandwiches. I like Jim calling out turkey sandwiches, because I guess it's always the same thing.
And it was probably in that briefing memo that he was reciting from.
This is one of the rare times I like Jim on the bus, this moment in the episode. I'm going to like Jim on the bus less as time goes by, as will everyone else on the show, I guess. But here is one crux for me. I decided in the next scene, I don't like the Will McKenzie dynamic.
Mm.
I don't know why she wants to be with him, because he's a little bit too much of a jerk. And I understand why he's mad at her. I think he has every right to be mad at her. I frankly don't think she's done a good job apologizing for it that we've seen on screen. But I don't like it, because we're clearly supposed to be rooting for them. And I don't want to root for them, because I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I keep hoping we're going to see a bit of a turn here where Mac is able to get out of her own head on this, because she has this mentality that like, sure, I cheated on him, but it, you know, that's in the past. And I was with someone else, and she doesn't realize she's cheating on two different people. And
the cheating on him proved how much she needed him, because she realized it was a mistake. Okay.
Okay, fine. Like, but let it go. They both just need to let it go, I guess. But she's ending up being annoying, and he is ending up being cruel. Yes. And neither one of those are good looks, and they certainly don't look good for each other.
Yeah. So I'm 100% with you on all of that. And there's also this big, like, Will is really upset because Nina knows he didn't have the flu. I don't think anybody cares. I think this is a non-story.
Nope.
I can't think of a time in my life that I have given any care to what news anchor was benched from what news coverage at any given time. It is not a thing. And so, like, I think sometimes people thought of this as a criticism of the West Wing, that everything was important, right? Like, hey, we're going to, you know, we need to, you know, deal with immigrants. That's important. We need to deal with, like, a senator is going to say a mean thing about us. And, like, that was the huge issue. Like, okay, it doesn't really matter. Like, it doesn't matter. It's, it's also ephemeral. But, like, this is one where it really just feels so weak and stupid. Now we get to what I would consider my second highlight of the episode, and I really hope she's sticking around, because I love me some Constance Zimmer, and I thought Constance Zimmer was great as the character of Taylor, Romney's new press person.
Yep.
I love that actress. I think I love the actress as a person, and I'm in love with her. We're getting married. No, but I like her and everything she does.
Congratulations.
And do you have any Constance Zimmer experience? You seen her in anything?
Well, I got to say, I am not... we're not getting married. She decided you know, you won. Congratulations. So just let me know where to send the flowers. I'm happy for you both. I'm looking back over her catalog of things that she's done in the past, and I don't think I've seen very many of these things. That being said, I loved her in this episode, and I hope we get to see her more, especially if we get stuck with Jim on the bus so much.
I loved her on Boston Legal and Joan of Arcadia. Those are two of my favorite roles.
Neither of which I've seen.
But I really liked her in this. But so now, after some Jim antagonizing with Constance Zimmer, we're in a diner with the soldier. What's the guy's name who I don't like, who's on the show now?
Dantana. Jerry Dantana.
So we get Jerry and Mackenzie interrogating this soldier. And one, like you, I think, I don't like that plot line. And two, I actually thought that scene was bad, like was technically bad. It felt very weirdly edited and directed to me. Even the audio sounded weird. It's not like I'm watching on headphones or on high-end speakers. I was watching it on my computer because I was taking notes. But there was a lot of inconsistency in that scene. And this doesn't matter. Like, I was clearly watching it too closely or something. But, like, first, the backgrounds are weird. Like, there's a mix of extras and cars outside that are very inconsistent because clearly they filmed it for a long time.
Sure.
But then the audio was weird. Like, there's different... It felt like a student film or something, where like in different cuts, what you would hear as the kind of background ambient noise would change. And then every once in a while, like a car would go by and they'd way overdo it on the Foley. Like, and it was like, nope, that's not what that sounds like. And so I could not get into that scene at all. And I think that Aaron made a very rare for him mistake, because we already know they're going to get blown up for this story. So like we know in the real world that this didn't happen. The US did not use sarin gas at this time period. Right. So we're watching them decide whether to trust this guy. We're seeing Mackenzie be more suspicious of him, but there's no tension in it for me. Cause I already know that she's going to listen to him. She's going to put him on the air, and she was wrong too. And so it feels like sometimes like we know more than the characters do, and that's cool. But here it's like, now I don't care. Like, I just do not care.
Mm-hmm. The thing that brought me out of that was the pacing of that scene, because for one, you wonder, like, why is Mac even there? And I guess Mac's there partly to be an expert, and one of the few and rare opportunities for us to see Mac like be really smart and good at things. So that was kind of nice.
Yes, I always appreciate those.
That was refreshing. But the way that she would, like, the soldier would say something, couple of letters together, and some acronym for something, and then she would explain it to Dantana, and then half the time she said it, he was like, I know.
Yes.
And so there was this weird like cadence of like explaining something a little bit more, I know, explaining something more, I know. And it's just like, why if he knows everything, why is Mac there? And if he knows everything, why does she keep explaining it to him? But we get set up with the whole thing of her being the expert in this. I don't get it.
My read on that was he was full of crap.
He didn't know
that when he said he knew, that he did not know. And it was his confidence, cockiness, whatever, of not wanting to admit that he didn't know these things, or that she was smarter than he was,
or have a girl explain something to him.
So that's how I was reading those. So I enjoyed that for her. But yes, I will always celebrate if there are moments where we're showing Mackenzie not being an idiot, and this scene did attempt to do that. But yeah, I just like you, it felt disjointed to me. And yes, that beat got old. We did it over and over again, and I was like, God, can we just be done with this scene? Like, this is where I got grumpy during the episode.
Yeah, I wanted to be done with it ASAP, and then, which is as soon as possible. Lex, thank you for explaining. Anybody's out there.
It's time for the weekly Beggared Belief. Is there a Beggared Belief theme song? I found the Will and Nina moment in this, I guess the ACN lunchroom or something.
Executive dining room. They actually called it something. I wrote it down because I had no idea what this thing was called.
I found it Beggared Belief that he shut it down, that he paid a pianist to be there, that he called a waiter by the wrong name of Pierre. And then she's like, is his name really Pierre? And he's like, no. And I thought that Will's weird power play was weird. I thought that Nina buying it was weird. I thought that Will's rant about doing good in news was boring, and like, we've already seen this and rehashing, and it feels so TV-ish and so aspirational as to take me out of it. So I didn't like any of it. I liked when she's, and then it becomes a key plot point, but I liked when she's like, I'm not going to tell. I'm not going to report on it because I like that you told me the truth. And I like that. I was like, all right, that's cool. And I like that Will was surprised that it worked. Like, clearly he didn't even expect that it was going to work.
That part was funny.
But the part that was least believable to me of all was that Nina stays, right? Will leaves. He's done. She's like, yeah, let me just stay here in this extremely weird environment with a piano player who's being paid to be here while I sip on this mimosa that I'm drinking. And then Will comes back and asks for a date. And she's like, no. And we get into that whole storyline. But like...
And he leaves again.
Yeah. It's just weird that she stays there to me. Like, who would ever stay there? Like, you just go. It's not fun to sit in a restaurant by yourself with two people you don't know watching you eat or not eat. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we finally do get the mystery message, Brian. We now know exactly what Will said to Mackenzie when he was drunk.
Mm-hmm. And it was, can you believe we got Obama?
Yes. It was also, I've never stopped loving you. You were spectacular.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah,
can you believe we got Obama? How did you feel about that whole scene, that whole moment?
Okay. On one hand, I feel like we're seeing a few things in this episode where Aaron's Sorkin is, he's kind of like playing the hits from season one. And that's totally fine to do. Like, if something was really successful and interesting in season one, like, go ahead and rehash it or dig into it a little bit more in season two. I don't know that Will and Nina in season one were like a really big hit, though. Like, it wasn't something that we really loved about season one. So the fact that we're like digging back into it and then like kind of scratching at the scabs of old stories from season one, not really super into that. There were a couple fun moments from this one, but all in all, the staging of it felt very unbelievable. It did beggar belief for me too. I'm looking through my notes on here and I just have one bullet point that just says, like, that's too easy. I felt myself thinking, well, something worse is going to happen now. Like, she agreed to it and then she's going to go back on it, or something. And it felt like we only got half of a plot here. The last thing I'll say is when it's kind of rude for Will to walk off and leave her behind. Like, even if she's like, okay, yeah, I guess I'll stay here and like read a book or something. That's kind of awkward, but like, he just won her over kind of twice. He did ask her out and stuff. But you could tell there's some like kind of fun chemistry between them, which I kind of do like. But the fact that he just like walk away, well, I got something else to do. He didn't
see ya.
Yeah. I wouldn't do that to someone else unless I had like a super pressing matter or something to run off to. But he was planning on being there and winning her over for like 15 minutes or something. Why bail after four? It's dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, everything about that scene to me was frustrating, except for, like you said, they do show some nice chemistry there, and then he's like, yeah, just leaving is weird. The best drawn woman in this episode is another woman whose character I can never remember the name of, Grace. Grace's character of Hallie? Hallie? Is that what they say?
Oh, yeah, Hallie.
We cut back to the campaign trail, and they're doing shots. And I assume you catch it because they make a pretty big moment of it. But she tosses her shot right over her back, has no interest in actually drinking it. And I was like, this is a cool lady because she's going to be part of the group and not going to be pressured to do shots that she doesn't want to do. And I found that very entertaining.
We get a little more of her backstory. Like, yes. She was talking about how she was a little more of an idealistic reporter and now she's stuck on the campaign trail.
And I'll have more to say about the campaign trail. I don't have more now. I don't know if you do, but like, I like that moment. Then we finally get Don and Sloan in the episode. And Don fixing the chair is very Sorkin-y to me. Like,
yep.
That's a very Sorkin-y thing of being in too deep and like, oh, it started as this and now it's this disaster. And then Sloan mid-conversation.
He bought a wheel kit for his chair.
Yes.
And he decided this is the thing he wants to do. That's funny. I don't know. I liked it.
It felt very Sorkin trope.
Slapstick.
But it is funny.
Yeah.
And then Sloan simply declaring, I'm the leak. I think I'm the leak. Like, all of that is very Sorkin-y. And it's at this point that I got really deep in my notes to myself. I have a theory. I like Sorkin's politics. I agree with what he has his characters say often. But in this show, particularly in this episode, but in this show, it feels too ham-handed, too transparent, too obvious, and too glib. For example, when Jim calls out the Romney campaign's hypocrisy, or even when Will was doing it at the top of the episode on the news, it's too much. I think that's one of my beefs with this show. And I think you're right that it's a lot of the plotting too, but like when we get into Jim being a jerk on the campaign trail and being everybody's hated person, he's like, we should do this. Like we can stop just being their mouthpieces. Like, sure, but nobody's going to act like this. Like, this is, it's silly. But when we go back to the bus with Jim and Hallie, I kept writing down Grace because I knew the actress's name. Hallie is a strong, confident, non-flubby woman, and I like that. And I didn't like, and this is like the worst part of some Sorkinisms for me, Jim isn't just being annoying to people on the bus. He's being rude.
Yeah.
Like, is there someone inside you operating the controls? Is this respectful? Can I get 30 minutes with the candidate? Fine. I'm happy to have you ask that every time. Pushing them on their stuff? Fine. But like saying to people like, are you a robot? Are you going to give me a real, like, that part I don't like, because that's a different kind of rudeness. It's rare that I'm mad at Jim, but I was mad at Jim.
I feel like Hallie is playing the game kind of the right way. You know, and I talked to this, and you and I talked about this, like when we both worked at a very giant company, and it was like, you can either kind of resist the bureaucracy and be, and not get very far, or not, and try to rally people to your cause, or you can kind of like play the game and then get some cool stuff done and make a difference, from the inside. And I suppose there's a time and place for both, but, knowing how effective you can be at being like a whiny punk is, that level of self-awareness does not exist with Jim right now, but we see it a little bit more with Hallie, and I like that.
The other thing you can do is quit, which is what we both did at that giant company.
It's true.
This is not the first time we've seen this. I think it was the second time, and it happens twice, maybe three times in this episode. Sorkin shows all the other reporters on the bus just babbling the campaign's talking points from the press person, and I don't feel like that's true either. Like, I feel like the press is a little bit more, even the press I don't like, most of the press I don't like, is a little bit more willing to at least say, you know, the Romney campaign is saying these things, but not just parroting it. And it was really trying to show, look at these automatons just saying whatever it is that the campaign wants them to say with these long pants across. I didn't love it.
Yeah, there was no like, and he's resisted questions from so-and-so, or, you know, there was no, it really did feel like people were parroting the schedule and talking points the same way the person on the bus was, the Romney campaign spokesperson on the bus was. Admittedly, I've never actually walked across and seen every single reporter's report from the field, you know, which is probably roughly like 30 seconds or something.
Right.
And so we've never had that kind of cross section of, but still it does feel a little exaggerated in this.
This is also the first episode where I feel like Sorkin has painted himself into a corner of his own devising, where he's got too many cast members that he's trying to attend to. You get Jerry Dantana again. Now he's bringing some people in to work on his thing. And I like Mackenzie yelling at him like, no, this is what you work on in your spare time. This is not like your full thing. But he's taking his trash and just tossing it. Like when he gets the whole conceit of the faxes for translations of tweets was stupid.
Oh, geez.
Just to like to build this extra tension, but they would come, he would crumble them up and throw them. He wasn't getting them in the trash can. He threw them on somebody's desk at one point. I'm like, that's really rude. Like, we get that we're not supposed to like this guy. We don't have to like make him be horrible. Neil has a whole subplot about Occupy Wall Street that is criminally underusing Neil. It's dumb. Neil is underserved on this Occupy Wall Street plot line. This episode is boring. I am grumpy. Those are my notes at that moment.
I forgot to even write about Neil. I guess, I don't know, I wrote like two lines, but it never really went anywhere. And that's the problem. Both Neil and that entire plot sub-story are being underserved. So why are they even in there?
Yeah.
Like, we can have a Neil-less episode. It'd be fine.
I would be sad if we had a Neil-less episode, but yes, you're right. And then they say, yeah, we're going to book one of your Occupy Wall Street people on Newsnight. And Neil's like, as long as Will's going to be fair. And that feels weird to me because they all love Will and they know he's going to be fair. And I liked Mackenzie's line. He's a lot of things, man, but has he ever been unfair? And then, of course, it cuts right to Will saying, if I don't get a name soon, I'm just going to start randomly firing people. I like that. That's funny.
Okay. That's funny.
Wow. And then we get to we meet another character to absolutely hate, Zane, yanking in Sloane by her wrist, dragging her through the newsroom.
Yes.
I do like that Zane says to Don, I'd like an apology. Don says, I'm sorry. Zane says, for what? Don says, I don't know. Like, once again, we have likable Don.
That's very Don.
Yeah. And then we get the first chair flip I saw telegraphed. Like, this chair is clearly going to break. He's going to flip over. The second one got me. And I love that Sorkin loves slapstick. I love that Sorkin's like, hey, I might be smart. I might write smart, snappy dialogue, but I don't mind somebody falling over the chair. And by the way, I liked it so much, he's going to do it twice. That worked for me. My note is, doing it twice was fucking epic. So I liked it.
Yeah.
But Zane leading her by the wrist was insane. The fact that she allowed it to happen was insane. Like, she yells at him pretty significantly afterwards. But why even, like, the embarrassing part, the humiliating part has already happened. You just say, no, like, get your hand off me. Like, God, I was so mad.
Yeah.
So mad.
She called him out on that. And then the other thing, like, the more subversive thing that Zane does is he talks about, like, how Dawn's putting ideas into her head. And Dawn had that great line of, like, she's got 50 IQ points on the both of us. No one's putting anything in her head.
We see Sloane is, like, touched by this. Then we have this, suddenly, like, Will and Charlie are starting to put something together. And then Dawn's like, yeah, I know what it is. But, like, when they're realizing that the only way that Nina could know as much as she did is if she heard directly from, what's his name? Christmasina, Reese. And I love that this tension's building and then Will can't open his safe. I saw that was going to happen too. And I was like, this is funny. Like, if Will really can't figure out how to open the safe while all this tension's building, that's funny. I like that. And this was a moment where the cast knows a little bit more than we do.
Yeah.
And the actors know a little bit more than we do. Like, they've put it together and they haven't spelled it out for us as clearly. And I was like, well, this is more fun than the other storyline where we know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I like this. I don't like when people stretch out a mystery, but it's clear that they're going to pay this off in a few minutes on the episode. And then Charlie has the best line of the episode. Do you remember? I watched it probably 10 times. We ride. Like, he just, it was hilarious. It was a little bit out of character to me. It was almost, it wasn't fourth wall breaking, but it seemed so silly. Like, he would never, we ride. And then the two of them being incompetent in their meeting with Reese was fun because it's rare for us to get to see men being competent on the show.
Yeah.
And they fight in front of Reese, which is very uncharacteristic of them on the show. And, Reese realizes they don't even have the blackmail on him. Reese has a powerful line to cement his dickishness of, like, you don't meet me halfway. I'm the president of the company. You meet me all the way.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. So I liked all that stuff. Man, Charlie was so good in that. You never listened to the recording? You didn't test it out?
I like your Sam Watson.
He's like,
voice.
Chain of custody. He's like, your chain of... Oh, it's so funny. Then we're back to Jim again, Brian. And Jim is rattling off questions and not even giving him a chance to answer. And that's not how reporting works either.
No. Nope.
Question, 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 question. And then trying to make Jim be the hero for Hannah. I thought, Hannah? Nope. Hallie? I thought that was stupid. And, like, here's a white man helping out this lady. Like, come on. And then...
You can tell Jim is trying to be Will. Like, he's trying to emulate the success he sees of this, like, powerful... interrogator on screen, but he's not doing it very well, and
he's trying to rally.
It's not the
all.
Right setting for it.
If we do it together, if nobody backs down. I did think it was funny that the one guy who they all hate besides Jim, the one guy who's like just slovenly and gross on the tour bus, they're like, that he's like, I'm with you, and then it's just the three of them.
They're like, really, nobody else?
Leaving them on the side of the road is bonkers, and mm-hmm. It's again, it's a moment that felt not believable to me that the tour bus would simply abandon these three reporters on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, to me, given that the show is based in reality and uses real events, doing something like that that's so, to me, TV-ish and not real makes it feel even less real. Like, makes it feel even, like, too fake because it's a show mm-hmm. that's so reality-based. But I do like that crappy tour bus guy or you know, Romney bus guy saying, I lifted some turkey sandwiches. I thought that was funny. It's like Chekhov's turkey sandwiches or something. But yeah. I guess, is Jim going to go home now or is he going to keep trying to cover the Romney campaign while not on the bus?
Well, I mean, someone's got to recover it. Right. And I don't think we're done with Hallie. And yeah. So
I'm going to learn
to wrap up that story.
Then again, when this, here's a moment where we know more than the characters in a way that works because we get Nina lying to Mackenzie about the voicemail. Mackenzie's like, Nina, what was that voicemail? And he's like, oh, he said, can you believe we got Obama? And we know that's not all he said. And like, you're screaming, no, he said more, but she doesn't know. But we know, I like that. Did you know where Nina was when she got that call?
Oh, totally. I'm sure he even wrote it down.
Very, very telegraphed.
Yeah. She was getting dressed. I was like, well, obviously she's not at home. You know, she's going to, either Will's at her place or she's at his place. Yeah. So it was obvious, which is fine. Like it's a little on the tropey side, but like
allowed,
we saw it coming.
Tropes exist for a reason. And then but what I didn't like was that it was a 1-2 punch of tropey moments because now we're back in the newsroom and they're like, Charlie's like, they're still here. I'm like, yeah, they're always here. They're working. They're still trying to work on mm-hmm. Jerry's story. And they're like, all right, pull the plug. like, there's nothing to report here. And then as she says it, here comes the slow, annoying fax machine again with just the evidence we need. Willie Pete burning. Willie Pete everywhere burning. And I was again angry at the translator guy using a fax machine just for television purposes. I was impressed that Charlie knew what Willie Pete was.
Yeah.
Was it white phosphorus? That was his
word? Yeah, WP.
And you really nailed it so well, Brian. We could have just skipped the entire episode and just had your monologue about, I don't care about this stupid plot line. And like, because it's supposed to be like the big, here it comes. And it's like, nope, don't care. Don't care.
Nope. And
this is one of my least favorite episodes.
It's so wild because I thought I had some of the best dialogue that we've seen, at least in the past handful of episodes.
I did love that Charlie mode at the beginning. Well, the joke was there. Loved it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Even the whole thing about like the tweets and stuff, like they were saying something about like when they got Bin Laden, it was in like a suburban area where people were on their phones all the time. Of course, you know, people were tweeting about this sort of thing, but they would never do it from where this extraction was taking place. And then of course they're like, well, you know, but maybe they will, let's find out anyway. Oh, it turns out they do. And they did. And
yeah.
Then all we had to do was wait for the right facts to come in. All of it just felt so barely connected enough to make sense. But when you take like two steps back from it, it's like, of course they're telegraphing all this stuff way ahead of time. And it's tough to really care about it because, like you said, we know it's not going to end up turning out to be true. And we know that they're going to really step in it because they're going to end up putting it on the show. And we just have to sit and wait for it to happen and hope that there's more interesting stories that Sorkin tells us in the meantime.
Yeah. And now, next week, I just looked ahead. Next week is Unintended Consequences.
Okay.
And it looks like we bring back Marcia Gay Harden. And
okay.
It looks like we're not going to necessarily... Well, it says that Maggie's going to recount her trip in Uganda to that lawyer.
Oh, wow. So she'll have gone and come back.
Yeah. So we'll see. And my hunch is, if it's told the way that I expect Sorkin to tell it, we'll cut to seeing those things. Like, she starts to tell and then now you're there. Like, that was very much how Social Network told its story.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. I really do want to like this show. And the funny thing is, I don't hate it, but it's not good enough. It should be better. It's got too much good stuff going for it, and it should be better.
Mm-hmm.
I've been, you know, I have discussed, I think mostly off mic, I have been watching Intermittent Sports Night as a palate cleanser, and boy, that's a great show.
We need to save it for when we actually do that show, because that'll be a fun one.
Don't forget, by the way, if you haven't yet joined The Incomparable, you should become a member at theincomparable.com/members. But Brian, I've never stopped loving you. You were spectacular tonight. Can you believe we get to keep Sorkin in it?